Welcome to Season 8 of the HPS Cast. I'm your host, Colbert Cannon. If you're new to the pod, HPS is a global investment firm. We manage approximately $100 billion in assets for a broad range of institutional and retail investors. That capital is invested across private and public credit strategies. Each week, I sit down with key relationships to, partners of, and friends of the firm to learn from their experience, ask how that experience shapes their current roles, and give insights into HPS and how we operate. So with that, let's bring in our guest. Our guest this week is a brilliant auctioneer, a best-selling author, and the host of her own compelling podcast. She graduated from Sewanee in Tennessee and then moved to New York to start her career at the legendary Christie's Auction House. She's been at Christie's since the late 90s and currently serves as a global managing director of strategic partnerships and ambassador for that storied franchise. Along the way, she wrote a best-selling book, The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You, which is currently being developed into a TV show, and released her second work, Claim Your Confidence, just last month. She's a truly gifted auctioneer, controlling a room like none other, and has traveled the globe as a speaker and thought leader focused on unlocking sales potential and empowering women in the workplace. She's also someone I am truly honored to call a friend. So without any further ado, I'm happy to welcome in this week's HPS Cast guest, Lydia Finette, Renaissance woman extraordinaire. Lydia, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. What an intro. Wow. I can't wait to meet her.
Exactly. All right, Lydia, I like to start from the start. Where are we from originally? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a small town in Louisiana called Lake Charles. Very hot, big lake, lots of time spent outdoors.
Amazing. All right. So when it came time for school, you ended up Sewanee. How did we end up at the School of the South, Lydia?
So I grew up in Louisiana. And then for high school, I went to boarding school in the Northeast at a boarding school called Taft. And then after 4 years in the Northeast, when the snow was coming down in massive piles year after year, I really wanted to go back down to the South to the warm weather. And Sewanee, when I went to see it, was just such a magical place that I couldn't say no.
All right. So you double majored in art history and history. What did you focus on in your studies? What part of the art world?
Well, I really came to art late. I went abroad my junior year for a program that Sewanee offers called European Studies. I'd said that my mother is British. She grew up in Oxford. And so Oxford University and Sewanee have a very strong tie. And I ended up going on a European Studies program to Oxford. And it was really while I was there that, you know, I had taken Art History 101 like most people, but there was something about studying in front of the paintings. And part of European Studies meant that you toured with a professor. So I had this incredible opportunity to see all of this art come to life. And I loved it. And so I declared the second major my junior year and just started cramming in classes. And, you know, the beauty of both of those things is art is informed by what's happening in history. So there's so much overlap. And contemporary art at that time wasn't really something that was much discussed in the way that it is now. You know, when I arrived at Christie's in 99, I think the sale was a $7 million evening sale, and now it's multiple billions. And so contemporary art was kind of at the cutting edge, and it didn't really capture my imagination at all. I always loved old masters. I loved Flemish art. I loved Northern Italian Renaissance, and I've grown to love more throughout my time in the art world.
All right. So you mentioned Christie's, as we said from the top, that's obviously where you started and continued your career. You graduate, you get a job there. Why was the auction world appealing to you at that point?
Well, when I was at Oxford, I read an article in Vanity Fair magazine about Christie's Auction House and the sale of Princess Diana's dresses. I became completely obsessed with this world. I wish it was about the art, but it was really more about the culture behind it, about the people who worked there. It was just this glamorous place where people were dressed in black tie, and there was a gentleman who got on stage in black tie to take a charity auction where all the proceeds went to a nonprofit of Princess Diana's choosing. And it's funny when I tell that story because a lot of people remember that article and they remember the Princess Diana sort of Vanity Fair cover. And it just, as I said earlier about Taft capturing my imagination, this is the thread of my life. Something will capture my imagination, and I am absolutely sure that I will make it there somehow. I don't know what that path will look like, but it is intentional, and I am focused on achieving that goal from the minute I see it in my mind.
So tell me about your first job. So you walk in the door. What exactly are you doing as a young woman at Christie's?
Well, so my first job was an internship, and I shredded paper the entire time. So I thought I was walking into a Park Avenue office, and I was walking into a small cubicle with just reams of paper. And they were just with a big post-it note that said, please shred. And that was my job, just shredding paper nonstop. And then I would have other odd tasks. And again, you know, this was 99. So the things were not done digitally. Everything was done on paper. And so I remember I had to cross off titles of a department that had been renamed and then just right in them next to this. And this was day after day.
Really value-added stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly. It really was the most mundane, but also I just was so excited to be there. I didn't really care.
So you get your foot in the door. You've had a long and incredibly successful career there. You've talked about sort of you find something you have a passion for. How do you learn new skills on the job? So you're figuring out the next step. How do you figure out new roles and figure out how to do them?
I always say yes to every opportunity. And again, that's in everything in my life. You will rarely hear me say no to anything. I love to test things out that I don't know how to do. And I truly believe that that's been one of the reasons I've been successful in my career. You know, I know people have mixed feelings about taking on more work or taking on additional roles. For me, it just always seemed like part of the learning process that I was excited about, because I do believe in a job, you get to a point over time where you can do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. You know, if you haven't had the pleasure of watching Lydia work, it is the best show in town. She's charming. She's funny. You always end up spending more money than you meant to.
Hopefully twice as much.
Exactly. Lydia, how much of that is you, like innate personality, and how much of that was something that you had to work really hard on?
You know, I think that the love of performance for me has always been there. I grew up singing in church. I sang throughout Taft. You know, I do like being in front of people. There's no question about that. And that is very helpful as a charity auctioneer. But to learn to be an auctioneer was something that was completely learned. The interesting part about what auctioneering became for me was it was not what I was taught to do. It was the evolution of learning how to do what I had been taught to do in my own voice, in my own style.
You have a very distinctive voice, I mean, in the broadest sense of that word, yes.
Yeah, and I believe that that was the evolution of me standing on stage for so long, realizing that what I had been taught was not going to deliver the results that I wanted. And so that I needed to evolve and tweak.
Do you remember the first auction you did?
I do, yes.
What was it? Tell me about it.
It was not a good auction, I'll be honest. It was very mediocre. I stood on stage in Kansas City for, I believe it was the Museum of Art there, the Kansas City Museum of Art. And I had been asked to take it pretty quickly right after I trained. They were sort of like, hey, who wants to go to Kansas City? And I was so eager.
You say yes to things. So you, yeah, next flight out. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like January. It was frigidly cold and I hate being cold. And I arrive and they were like, where is the auctioneer? And I remember saying, I'm the auctioneer. They said, no, not the bid clerk, you know, not the person who stands next to the auctioneer to take bids and not the spotter in the back of the room. Like, we are talking about the person who is getting on stage to be in front of everyone. I was like, nope, the answer is still me. And I am still the person who is going to get on the stage. And they just didn't want to hear it. And then I definitely remember a conversation about putting me at the kids' table instead of at the head table where I was going to be seated. So anyway, all of those things aside, I got on stage and the first thing I did was hammer down my gavel really hard, which if you've ever seen me take an auction is something that I continue to do. What I did not realize is if you hit a gavel really, really hard multiple times, chances are that the stick is going to break off the top. They're not meant to be slammed down. They're meant to be slammed down once, not 15 times in a row as you're trying to get a crowd of noisy people to stop talking. So the handle snapped off, the top of the gavel hit the ground and then rolled under the podium. And I had to get down on my hands and knees. And, you know, today it would have been a joke. I would have been like, did you guys just see that? Like, you're lucky it did not hit someone in the crowd. You know, I was on my hands and knees, like searching, just so stressed out. And then I got up and, you know, at that point, I didn't even really know anything about art. I didn't really know that much about auctioneering. And it was so painful. I mean, people did not stop talking. We raised, you know, a quarter of what they wanted to. It just was bad across the board. And I remember getting off and being like, oh, because I thought I was going to be so good at it. And I just really was not good at it.
These things take time. But I mean, I've seen you in the peak of your career, Lydia. So I know it takes a long time to get there. Tell me about, you do have your own voice, but I imagine early on you are learning from others. What did you take from other auctioneers? When you watch people as a young person coming up in this space, what did you look at them and say, oh, I can take that and make it work for me?
So, you know, there is the element of being trained at a place like Christie's where there is sort of an elegance to the practice. You know, what works in art auctioneering, which will I think will always work on stage, is command of the room. So, you know, big hand gestures, feeling like everybody there wants to be included in some way. And so I think I was able to take that style and make it attractive on a charity auctioneering stage, which is very different. You got to find your angle and work your angle.
When you're doing an auction and the gavel falls, do you allow yourself to editorialize? Like, how often are you thinking, man, that was a smart buy versus, oh no, they're going to regret that one?
I can often tell in people's faces how they feel, to be honest. It's a pretty psychological job. When the hammer falls and I see someone wince, I'm like, ooh, they thought they were the underbidder on that. That's going to sting. And then other times you see people celebrating where they didn't think that they were going to get something. But, you know, I think a lot of times I can tell where something's going to end up just by looking at the bidders. You know, I can usually tell who the underbidder is going to be because there's something that changes in their face when they realize that they're getting kind of close to their limit. And so my job is really to push the underbidder because usually at these things, there's one person who doesn't have a limit and they'll just keep going as long as they're having fun.
I mean, this conversation is making me feel like we should never play poker together. That's my takeaway from this, Lydia. Okay, Lydia, let's talk about some of your other work. So I have many friends who claim they want to write a book, and more often than not, it doesn't get done, or if it's completed, if we're honest, it is often subpar. You, by contrast, have written two great books. I want to start with the first, The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is You. First, how did you decide that was a story you wanted to tell?
Well, I had been talking about writing a book for probably 7 years. I remember telling the New York Times that I was going to write a book. When I was in a piece, they were doing a day in the life piece, and they asked me what I did when I got home. And I said, sometimes I write this book that I've been writing. And I remember the reporter saying, what's the name of the book? And I think I told her a different title. And then I think I came up with the title later when the transcript was sent back to me. And I said, actually, could we change it? And originally it was called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room. I added Is You when I was writing it because I was like, this isn't a story to me. This is a story for other people to read and to learn from. And that was really how it started.
It is truly a great read. It's full of incredible lessons. And I recommend it to all my listeners to get the full benefit. But give them a little taste, Lydia. What is an example of a lesson you talk about in your book?
So I start off the book trying to bring people into those few seconds before I get on stage. You know, I started by saying, Lydia, you're on in 10 seconds. And I walk you through the process of what it takes to walk out onto a stage of 1,000 people with a piece of paper that basically has one line of copy on it and you need to raise $1 million. And what it takes to steel yourself against that moment. And I started off by talking about the strike method. And that really for me is the gavel falling makes me feel confident and empowered and ready to own the room and take the stage. And that's the beginning of the book. I walk you through essentially how I learned to be powerful on stage, how I learned to have the confidence to stand on stage in Madison Square Garden with Bruce Springsteen and feel fully confident that I'm supposed to be there in that moment. And I try to tell a lot of the pitfalls because I think a lot of people see the end product, especially in this day and age. When you think about Instagram or Facebook or, you know, I'm not on TikTok, but social media in general allows us to give the highlight reel of our life. But the highlight reel of my early days as an auctioneer was so painful. And I want you to know that so that the next time you fall flat on your face, like I did many times, you will understand that that's what it takes. You know, failure is a huge part of the learning process. And as you become less fearful of failure, the faster you go and the more you do.
We always say on this podcast, you learn so much more when things go wrong than when they go right. And your book does such a great job talking about the life lessons and stories out of that. Now, let's talk about your second work, which was just released recently, Claim Your Confidence. Now, again, anyone lucky enough to see you on stage would leave with the distinct impression you're the most confident person on the planet. But your book talks about how that confidence, as you've just said, it isn't just innate. Like, it is something you've worked on and indeed claim. Is that a fair summary? Or when you distill down your second work, how do you do it?
Yeah, I would say very simply that we are all born with confidence, but we have to choose to claim it over the course of our life. And over the course of this podcast, I think I've given you a couple of examples of things that I've done to do that. But auctioneering for me has been the ultimate test in confidence, in believing in myself and learning that I can do things that I don't think that I'm able to do. And what I've learned is that every time I do something that internally I'm like, oh my God, am I going to be able to do this? And I'm able to do it, I'm 15 times more confident on the other side. So we can't stay in our comfort zone. That's not where you become confident. You don't become confident doing the same thing day in and day out. You have to get really uncomfortable and you have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And once you learn that, I think it is without a doubt the best secret that people don't talk about.
Well, and if anything that you've heard today resonates, which I'm sure it does, these books are fantastic. You know, they expand on everything that Lydia's talking about. I can't recommend them highly enough. Well, then let's talk about your newest project, your podcast, the same name. So amazing guests talking about some fascinating things. How did you decide on this as your next side hustle?
Well, it was interesting. During COVID, I started an Instagram Live just because I really needed connectivity. I had 3 children who were all in school, and I just felt like I needed something for myself. And so I said to my husband, I'm going to start an Instagram Live. We're going to have it benefit the River Fund, which is a nonprofit that I've worked with for many years. I'm just going to ask people to donate if they're watching. And the premise will be simple. It'll be called "The Most Powerful Woman in the Room is dot, dot, dot." And I'll just interview a woman about what she's doing right now in this crazy world that we're living in. And this was early COVID. I mean, this was probably, you know, end of March 2020.
I love that you're such an extrovert. You made it like 2 weeks and you're like, I need more people around me.
What will I do in this world?
You're 14 days into pandemic. You're like, it's over. I need to talk to more people.
It's so sad. It really is. I know people are always sort of like, so you're an extrovert. I'm like, I like to say that I'm an extrovert. There's like, I do not like to be alone. I do not like to be relaxed. I like to do things all the time. And that was a perfect example. So at 4 o'clock every day, I would go live on Instagram and I would interview women who were doing different things, running businesses, stay-at-home moms, like just to give other people a hot minute to jump on for 25 minutes and hear what somebody else was doing to cope. And it made me feel so great because not only was I putting this information out there, people were donating to the River Fund, which was, you know, I wasn't able to get on stage to raise money for people at that point, but it was kind of an amazing thing to be able to do something for them. But more than anything, it just introduced me to this amazing world of women. And interestingly, the team from Rockefeller Center, where I've worked at Christie's my entire career, and then also published my book with Simon & Schuster, which is in the same building as Christie's, and they called me and said, would you ever consider coming and bringing what you did on Instagram to the podcast booth? And I said, well, I think power may not be something that appeals to everyone, but everybody wants to be more confident if they don't feel that. And I would love to interview the people that I bump into all over New York City every day and ask them about their confidence journey. Because I think, again, people always assume like you're a successful guy. Are you always confident? Have you always been that? Or, you know, Lydia, you're a successful woman. Have you always been confident? And the net is very few people are born with it, but they can usually pin something to when they realized that confidence was going to be key to their journey.
I listened to your episode with Jenny Fleiss of Rent the Runway, and it was a great one. I highly recommend it. How do you decide on the right focus for each guest? So you've got these amazing women coming in. How do you find the right thread for each one?
Well, there's so much to learn from every single person. And sometimes that's more on the business side. Sometimes that's more on the personal side. Sometimes it's a combination of both. And so I always start off by asking the person, you know, where they're from. And then I let the guests lead. I know where I want the interview to go, but I really let them lead the conversation and ask questions that I would want to know. You know, it's not necessarily about what everybody's interested in, but I want people to feel like it's a conversation between two people and a conversation about their life, their story, and more importantly, how they got to where they are and if they're confident in where they are now.
Well, you can imagine all this is music to my ears. We love that kind of content. So for anybody who likes this podcast, search for Claim Your Confidence wherever you listen to podcasts. Right after you subscribe to this one, subscribe to that one. So Lydia, let's talk about what's next. I mentioned this earlier and I meant it. You truly are a Renaissance woman. You've got a day job. You've got your books. You've got your podcasts. As you said, you've got a lovely family. What's next for Lydia Fenette? What are you excited about in the coming years?
Well, I am absolutely thrilled. In the next couple of weeks, I'll be releasing more information about this, but I have seen a white space in the charity auctioneering market for many years. One thing that often happens to me is I'll get a request for an auction and then I'll get two more on the same night. You know, New York, Monday through Thursday during peak gala season, there are auctions all over the city. But post-COVID, a lot of people left New York and now are in different areas of the country, and they've realized that there's a need for charity auctions there as well. I have a number of people that I've trained over the course of my career. I trained, I think, 12 classes of auctioneers at Christie's alone. And what I would love to do and looking forward to doing is not only representing auctioneers to make sure that if you have someone on stage and you are a nonprofit, that you have the right person who can maximize your fundraising potential in the room that night. But in addition to that, I want to train up an incredibly diverse group of people to continue doing this all over the country and hopefully all over the world ultimately. So that's the beginning. I'll be teaching public speaking classes out of there for sort of C-suite individuals who are looking not only to be good public speakers, but to really be fantastic public speakers. And then ultimately, I'm looking to merchandise everything for auction so that we, as auctioneers, know that when we get on stage, we can actually see the paddles. What a revolution it will be.
This is incredibly exciting stuff. Lydia, knowing you and knowing what you're capable of, I'm sure it'll be a huge success, and I'm excited to follow the next steps in your career there. Lydia, always great catching up, but with that, I want to move to the last segment of the podcast, which is something we like to call Best Ideas. It's where we offer up something that's added value in our lives recently, Best Ideas, because it's our goal as investors to maximize exposure to those. Lydia, you're our guest. I'm going to ask you to go first. What is your best idea this week?
My best idea, because I'm always a big believer in making sure that you understand what's going on with your financial life and situation, is first of all, to call your company. That's number one. That's my great idea. But secondly, pick up Financially Fearless by Alexa Von Tobel. It's a fantastic book. It's a book I think that really helps map out, especially for young women who have not been told that finance is important in their life, to understand what it looks like to be financially fearless. So pick up that book and follow along with her journey, because she's been an amazing inspiration to me, just in ensuring that I'm on top of my own financial goals and financial awareness.
Financially Fearless by Alexa Von Tobel. Fantastic. Well, great. For my best idea, as people know, I like to be inspired by the guest of the week. And Lydia, as we heard, was raised in Lake Charles, Louisiana. So I started thinking about the Bayou State, and I came to a TV show that I loved as my best idea this week. Now, before I start, we live in a world of peak TV. You can't possibly keep up with it all. And so what I like about this recommendation is it's a self-contained single season of 8 episodes. Sometimes you get a wreck and it's like 8 seasons long, and it's just, it's impossible. My best idea this week then is a stunning thriller. It's actually about the drug trade between Mexico and Italy, where the port city of New Orleans and a Louisiana shipping family plays a pivotal role. I'm talking about The Incredible 000, currently streaming on Amazon Prime. It's based on a book of the same name, written by a gentleman named Roberto Saviano. He's the guy behind another great TV show, Gomorrah. And the protagonists are called the Linwood family, the patriarch played by the always incomparable Gabriel Byrne. And his daughter is the recently Oscar-nominated Andrea Riseborough. It looks at the drug trade from a shipping perspective, like literally how does cocaine leave Mexico and end up in Europe? It's exhaustively researched, it's thoroughly plausible, and therefore an even more compelling dramatic piece. The story is fast-moving, it's breathless, the actors are incredible, and like I said, it's an incredibly tight and exciting 8-episode masterpiece. So, in honor of one of Louisiana's favorite daughters, let me recommend a show where the Big Easy plays a prominent role, the show 000 on Amazon Prime. Lydia, ever watched that one?
I've never watched it, and I'm actually going to New Orleans tomorrow for a book event, so I will watch it all of the way.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really, really well done. With that, it is time to wrap up for the week. Lydia, always such a pleasure to catch up. A treat to have you on. Congratulations on your success. Here is to many more, and appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. This has been such a wonderful conversation.
Thanks again to our guest, Lydia Finner. Check out our show notes to learn more about Lydia and her work as an auctioneer and Christie's ambassador. You will also find links to the book she's written, as well as a link to her best idea, the book Financially Fearless by Alexa Von Tobel, and then finally my best idea, the Amazon Prime Video limited series 000. This podcast was brought to you by At Will Media with HPS Investment Partners. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. The opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the host, Colbert Cannon, and the guest of each episode, and do not necessarily reflect the views of HPS Investment Partners.